Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Welcome to episode 171 today, and I am just so excited because I have somebody here from a place that I have talked about and learned about and just been in awe of for very long. They've been a big inspiration for my podcast from the Rodale Institute. It's Maggie Saska, who's the plant production specialist, and I reached out to her because I got an email from them talking about internships and opportunities at the Rodale Institute, and I asked if she would, if somebody wanted to come on, and she said she would come on and talk about the things that are available there. So welcome to the show, Maggie.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here this morning.
Oh, well, I'm so excited to have you. So do you want to start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I can give you the nutshell version. I've taken the job here just over 2 years now as a plant production specialist at Rodale Institute. But before that, I've had a long, I'd say over 20 years of career of working in horticulture and farming, both kind of for nonprofits. I've done this before. I've worked at a university as a technician. I've gone to grad school at a university. And I've also worked in other places with greenhouses and high tunnels, kind of commercial work. So Rodale is definitely a type of place and a structure I've never quite experienced before, kind of for the size and the reputation for organic. So it's really exciting to be here as the plant production specialist. So kind of what I do now is working in the gardens, in the greenhouses, helping out the ASC, which is like a CSA program to grow produce for farmers markets and their members. And I'm kind of working with a lot of different plant material, a lot of different people, and it's really a great thing.
Wow. Well, how exciting. Yeah. So then, I always like to start out like asking about your very first gardening experience. You know, were you like a kid? Were you an adult? Like, who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, how'd you get excited about going to college and studying horticulture?
I think for me, it was really being outdoors. My dad was probably more of the gardener and outdoor person. I'm the daughter of a public school teacher, so somebody who taught earth science. Oh. So I think that has a lot to do with it. We were definitely exposed to outdoors and, watching him work and watching him be outdoors and, having that first experience, probably weeding or something really simple in my parents' garden and just being around the house and, outdoors, really, and learning to love that aspect of it really early on. But I would say my first really formative experience was, this is probably illegal now, but working as an 11-year-old kid, picking blueberries at a local farm and working with a farmer and, vegetables and starting to have that experience of production and also the food side of things starting to be tied to it.
Wow.
Yeah, really the love of the outdoors that drove me to it.
I'm so curious to ask, and if you don't want me to, I can edit this out, but where did you grow up?
I grew up in Northfield, Connecticut, which is sort of the northwest corner of Connecticut. So that's about zone 6, you'd say, and it's a little bit colder than where we are now, or where I am now in Pennsylvania, but, definitely clear summers and clear winters and a northern climate.
Nice. I'm in Montana, but I grew up in New York.
Okay. All right.
So that's my background. So do you want to tell us then how you learned to grow organically? Like, how did you learn that in school or from your parents or?
I would say I probably really didn't think about the word organics and, kind of in that formal way until after college, I would say. So, you know, I had the interest in gardening and growing. So, you know, working on farms at a young age, kind of just what I've mentioned, and then following that path to university and getting a degree, a bachelor's in horticulture. And a lot of that training really was commercial and conventional. And I think I really didn't think that much about it or how to go about things differently until I really started to work commercially in the industry. And probably my first experience is using pesticides, is that being kind of an expectation of the job, really starting to get me to think about what I was doing and seeing that, you know, one, it was dangerous, two, it is damaging, and then starting to think differently and wonder about different ways of growing that would be as productive and profitable, but not being damaging to the environment that I really have grown to love. So that was kind of the thought process. And then through that, just kind of exploring different options for, you know, things like fertilization and seeing kind of what was out there in the industry and what other people were using successfully. So I can't really say that I had like a formal training in organics. It's been kind of more of a process of exploration and, you know, and learning myself.
Nice. I like that. I always tell people, like, one of the things you learn when you go to college is as much what you don't want to do as what you do want to do. And you, I was just talking to one of the TAs yesterday. It's so funny. At my school, who was talking about going back to college to, you know, help his kids out more and stuff. And he's like, but I just don't know what I want to do. And I was like, well, you know, I always tell people, you know, you're going to be sitting next to some obscure person and they're going to be like, oh yeah, my cousin's niece's best friend, like, has this job that'd be so perfect for you. Like, I was sitting in some like philosophy class and somebody was talking about this flower fauna job and like, you could go to work for the Forest Service and get paid to go out into the forest and like do these plot areas and count the flowers and count the plants and, you know, do these little surveys. And then I ended up taking like a bunch of science. I could probably have like a minor in science. And I just took them for fun and that was from there. But anyway, well, so then, all right, I have one more question I want to ask and we can take it off the record if you don't want to, but are you a millennial?
No, I'm not. So I am, I don't mind sharing my age, but this year I'll be 41. So I'm definitely not a millennial. And then I would have been going to college. I think my first semester would have been 1994, fall of 94. So I think things have definitely changed for the millennials that are going to college and people that are seeking a horticultural path. I think there's a lot more access to organic out there, but I'm definitely not a millennial myself.
Okay. Well, you sound like one. So, well, let's see. Do you want to talk about what you do and what the opportunities are at the Rodale Institute now, or do you want to tell us about something that grew well this winter? I don't know. Where do you want to go?
I could either wherever you think your listeners would like to go. I could talk about, you know, the Rodale Institute now. I think people don't realize it's such a large place. And there are a lot of kind of different sections and departments to what's happening here. So I know that people know like the Rodale Institute for the work like in no-till, for the farming systems trial. That's been one of the longest running, you know, comparisons between conventional versus organically managed soils that we have here. That's been ongoing. And, you know, there are a lot of different things going on, like with the orchards, and there's a, you know, that kind of aspect to growing. There's a vegetable production program that's happening here. And then there's, you know, in addition to this, the farming systems trial, there's a lot of different types of research that are happening here. And this year they're even setting up a vegetable systems trial that's going to be taking place out in our fields, looking at comparing conventionally grown veg versus organically grown veg and, you know, different things on like the impact on soils and the impact on nutrition and kind of overall health. So I'm sorry, that was kind of a tangent. I don't know if you have to edit that out, but yeah.
No, I want to go deeper. I want to hear more about all of it.
But people, so I think when you come here, you know, and you land and you come to Rodale and you kind of land on site, you know, 333 acres is a lot of space for production, but it's really broken up into kind of these different uses, you know, and, you know, in addition to all those things, we do have like field crops and grains, and there's, of course, the newer addition, I think for Rodale, the addition of animals and things like pasture-raised hogs and pasture-raised chickens, the broilers, and egg production, goats and sheep. I mean, all that stuff is really newer to Rodale, and that kind of, you know, makes up our bigger whole. So it's interesting where you have a lot of passionate people, but people definitely have kind of these different focuses when you come here on site. So, you know, a lot of the work that I do is out here in kind of the front area, which are more of like the demonstration gardens area. So we have some smaller vegetable plots that are kind of for smaller scale homeowners and growers like that, that can kind of see organic vegetable production that we have here on site. We've got some plots that have pollinators and cut flowers in them. So bringing in beneficials to the garden in a really different way, that we're providing the type of flowers and foliage that they like to make their homes in. We have a small medicinal garden that we've established with a French company called Boiron, that we grow different herbs to show people kind of what they can do in their home gardens and where different types of homeopathic herbs come from and what they could look like growing in their environment. So Rodale, I mean, there's always a lot going on in a lot of different places.
Nice. Well, I'm thinking, I wish I knew where that email was that I wrote back. And, cause there was something where, are there like internships right now, like specific ones or something?
Yeah.
Or was there a job opening?
There's a lot of different internships that are open now. So, you know, we've got a few different programs. You can certainly work for research. They're looking for interns. The garden area where I work a lot over the summer, we're looking for summer interns. The ASC program, which is kind of the flip of a CSA, if your listeners are familiar with that, which is community supported agriculture. We have agriculture supported communities here. They're looking for folks who would want to come to the, you know, to the vegetable production and work either for a shorter stint in the summer, so that would be just 2 or 3 months, or for a longer period of time from like April through November, really kind of taking on that more of a farmer training experience for them, and really experiencing the full season. And I think also the animal folks are looking for someone who would want to come and work with them for the season as well. So there are a lot of different opportunities right now for interns who want to commit to a time period and possibly live on site and take advantage of the other perks that interns have. So those opportunities are wide open. I think there's spaces in all of those different programs at this point.
Yep, I found it. The email. Okay. So it talked about everything you talked about. There was a veterans farmer training program.
Yep. That's kind of a different program on its own. And there's a special coordinator for that program. And we work with vets who come in and they're here different times of the year for different durations and really kind of focusing on what their interests are. And they work with us alongside the interns and volunteers. We have volunteers all the time on site that they can come in and learn from us. So,
you know, we should tell people where it is, because you and I know, but maybe listeners maybe have never even heard of the Rodale Institute.
So the Rodale Institute, we're in Kutztown, Pennsylvania. So it's maybe 20 minutes, maybe not that far, but maybe 15 minutes west of Allentown, Pennsylvania. So eastern Pennsylvania, kind of central as well. So we're definitely surrounded by bigger farms here, but we are kind of on that border that does feel a little bit busier, kind of that, you know, that New York, New Jersey kind of thing is definitely happening.
How far is, like, Philadelphia?
Philly's about an hour and change. So it's not too bad. And then I think New York is maybe, I'm trying to think. I drive up through there all the time. Maybe an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, that's small.
Yeah,
To
it's
like
not
this
far at
city?
all to the city. Yeah, and it depends, of course, going to New York, it always depends on how you go in and what route you want to take, but it's definitely not far.
I remember when I was working at Apple, the kids, I always called them the kids, but they were like, in their 20s, going to college. Most people that work at Apple, they require a college degree or maybe getting your master's, so that age group. And they were always talking about on the weekends, we're going to Philly to get a cheesesteak, or we're going to Philly to get a, different things. And just I just thought it just reminded me of so much fun, road trips and things. And just okay, and then some of the others, there was like a research internship, there's communications development, multimedia,
Sorry, you get
accounting,
all those. They're It's funny,
education,
I
like
think
tons of stuff. So I
there
just
are
wanted
tons.
to tell people about it, because I think, I'm sure some listeners out there might be interested in doing something like that. I
Yeah,
was
so
looking at them thinking, communications, that looks fun.
you'll have to forgive me. There's sort of like
It's
a
okay.
I tend to think outdoors when I'm here at work. I tend to forget that they had those postings too, just because we spend most of our time outside, but I know those folks are working really hard behind the scenes, in education and communications to really get our message out there, which is really huge of being a nonprofit. So we have all these farming activities, ongoing, but we really are a research and education facility. So we rely on people who come in as interns and volunteers to really help us staff and do the good work that we do. So yes, definitely we have those opportunities as well, kind of working on those areas that are more behind the scenes, but kind of more oriented to getting our message out there and helping us run the programs that we run. Because in addition to all those great things that we do have a really good educational program where folks can come in at different points in the year and take classes from the actual people who are running the animal program or running the ASC program or the garden, excuse me, or the medicinal area or composting. That's another really big popular area that we've had success with. So there's definitely a lot to do, and when you come here on site, for the educational programs and things that are listed in our events program, that they're really learning from the people that are doing the work, which is really exciting. And everybody that's here really has to have that skill to be able to double with teaching as well as doing.
I love that. I'm gonna go visit one of these days. I went across country once with my stepdaughter when she was looking at colleges, and we stopped at all these different colleges between here and New York. And I really wanted to go down to Kutztown, but we just couldn't fit it in and see the Rodale farm. But one of these days, and I think, people talk about everybody's into their phone and everybody's not communicating and they really like real life. But to me, the people I meet in my phone, the people that I meet on live, the people I get to talk to on my podcast, you like it's guests like you that are just amazing. And just everybody's like, and then the other big thing they're all talking about is they meet at conferences. Like, how fun would it be to meet other listeners and other people at a workshop or an education day at the Rodale Institute? So,
That would be great. And everybody, the best time to visit, I'll tell your listeners this,
Okay,
and
cool.
this is where I should be looking at a calendar, is for our annual field day in July. So it's usually the third Friday in July, if I have that right. And it's an open house essentially. Our doors are wide open. You can sign up for our program. We've had wagon rides and tours. And on that day, we've got people that are actually, running different programs from research, again, to ASC, gardens, animals, you name it, orchards. You can come out and take a tour in the peak of the summer, and really hear from the folks that are running those programs, and different types of research opportunities. So it's if you have people that are looking to come out, that's really a good time to plan to come out to the farm. Or any time's a good time, but that's probably one of the better ones.
But they probably, we should probably tell listeners to like look at your website and see like, are there certain days that's open and what the hours are like, I wouldn't want somebody to go all that way. Like the people, what is it? The movie Chevy Chase and Vacation gets to Wally World and it's closed. Don't do that.
No, take a look at the website. Most of the year, the grounds are basically all of the year. I shouldn't say most. The grounds are open and we've got some self-guided tours. Really? That you can pick up at our farm store. So we've got a cute little store on site that sells, you know, different types of gardening things and, you know, books and seeds and all sorts of things. Heather does a really great job stocking it. But you can come up, you know, when the store is open and pick up a pamphlet and kind of have a self-guided experience around the farm. And if the store is closed, I do believe we have those, that self-guided tour information in our main office. But my biggest thing would be, you know, to your listeners to suggest to come out when the weather's a bit warmer. There's a bit more to see. Spring, summer, and fall are really great times to come out to the farm.
Nice. Well, I think, you know, I bet a lot of my listeners are going to be like, wow, I never thought of that. I never heard of this place. Or, you know, I've always wanted to go. Now I'm going to go. So let's get back to the script then. I mean, sure. Is there anything I forgot? Well, if you think of something, we'll just...
Did you want to talk about what did well this year or favorite activities in the garden? Whatever you want to talk about, I'm happy to discuss. The only one I don't have a great answer for is the motivational quote.
Okay. Don't worry, you're going to be dropping golden seeds, so we'll come up with one by the time we get there if we don't. Tell us about what grew well this year in Pennsylvania.
This year we had a really good year for squash, like winter squash and things like that. I don't know if you're familiar with up in Montana, if you fight downy mildew at all. Mm-hmm. Okay. but the previous year we had a really tough time because that kind of came into our area early. But we had a really nice year for summer squash that did really, really well, among other things, out in the growing fields. And I'm trying to think what anything else that was spectacular. Of course, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants looked really, really great this year as well. You know, it's been really dry here in Pennsylvania, like many parts of the country. So that's always a challenge to get the irrigation up and going. But overall, it was a good year. We didn't suffer from the late blight like some of your listeners may have experienced on things like the solanaceous crops as well. So overall, a good year.
Okay. Well, I was thinking that wasn't like in the Northeast, it was, and like kind of some of the like Michigan and that area, it was really wet. It was like the opposite, wasn't it?
That's the wacky thing. Yeah. So, I mean, so for us, it was a drier summer, definitely later in the season. But yeah, I think for your listeners, they could be experiencing something totally different. Mm-hmm. That's our new weather.
Right. And then did you want to talk about like just a little bit if even though this year you didn't have the downy mildew, like is there something that if people did have it could help? And downy mildew is like that powdery mildew, right?
Yeah, there's two different types of mildew that you see a lot on plants in general, or cucurbits. That's kind of what we're talking about with the squash. Downy is the one that sporulates on the underside of the leaves. And what you'll notice on the leaf surface is kind of that yellowing or discoloration. Mm-hmm. And it might look, I don't know, even like, you know, you can even mistake it for a nutritional problem. But when you flip the leaf over, you'll see that the downy mildew sporulates, meaning has those little, reproduction spores on the bottom, backside of it. It kind of a gray color. That's different from what people might be more familiar with, which is powdery mildew. And that's kind of that white coating that you see on the surface of, you know, cucurbits. You see that on the surface of most famously, if any of your listeners have roses in the garden, that's something that always really kind of attacks those those plants. But they're two different things. And the powdery is something that we can deal with. You can do things organically that we've tried here. It sounds a little wacky, but we've even done things like milk. Milk sprays are actually effective.
I've heard that.
And that's, I think we've used between 25 and 40% milk. We use organic milk, whole milk, and we spray that on the leaf surface. And it really does, you know, put that, powdery mildew in check. You can do things like oils, and there are different types of organic sprays out there that will address the problem of the powdery mildew. And powdery typically likes warm days and cool nights. So when you start to fall into that weather pattern, you know, you're starting to get into like powdery territory. The trouble is downy, which is a different disease and pathogen altogether. That's really hard to treat. There's not a lot of organic options on the market. And the other difficulty is that you have to have contact with a lot of these products on the underside of the leaves, which is really hard to do. If every, you know, you can go out and kind of spray the surface of the leaves, you know, but the underside is really tricky. So, you know, things like good airflow help. I've heard people spray compost tea on plants. We haven't done that terribly successfully for the downy mildew. But you know, it's definitely a trickier thing to get a handle on.
Okay. Well, that was a lot of information right there. How about, is there something you're excited to try next year? Something new or different?
We've got, every year when we go through the seed catalogs and when I look at them, I get kind of waylaid because I'm always excited with the different new varieties that are out there. So we've got a couple new types of tomatoes that I'm growing, not just for the gardens, but we also do a plant sale. That we'll be offering up. There's a new type of kale called Bare Necessities that's kind of new to us. It's kind of a frillier version of Cyber Frill, which we're excited to grow and kind of see what does. But, you know, we're always looking at new varieties and just to kind of see how they grow. So I'm always fascinated by that with the kind of the biology, but it's also really exciting as a cook to be able to put something different on the plate. So I'd have to look at my, this is where I should have my list, I know, in front of me. But yeah, we're always looking at new varieties.
I like that you put that together. It's exciting as a cook to put grow something different, try something different. So I've been like totally reminiscing this morning about last year I got to go to Paris. And like the first day, you know, they send you off and you're like, you drop your luggage off at your hotel and you can't check in until the afternoon. And so you're walking around Paris after like an overnight flight and you're kind of foggy and stuff. And so I stopped at this place and got I only ate out twice, I think, the whole time I was there. But they served eggs with arugula, this tiny baby fresh arugula salad. And like, so last year I grew a ton of arugula. It was just so fun. Just so exciting. Anyway, well, do you want to tell us? Sorry.
No, I'd love to add to that.
Okay.
As a gardener. Cool. Just that, like, I think it's really important that gardeners are cooks, and that people who are growing for market. I mean, there's a huge difference, I think, between getting a giant woody carrot and that looks like a carrot and something that's actually tender and flavorful. And, you know, there's a huge difference in getting, you know, good tasting brassicas or broccoli that's had, you know, the right treatment to the field. I think people forget that what they do in the gardens will come out on their plates. I think cooks get that.
Excellent. Our health food store in town, their motto is, it's all about the taste. And so,
good.
Yeah, it's true. And it's so true. I mean, like, I talk to my listeners a lot about in the winter, I can't hardly buy tomatoes at the store. On the flip side, Mike pickles beets. And so I put these, you know, yummy, delicious purple beets on my salad. And it just kind of like is just different from the taste of a tomato on your salad. And yeah, because I think it's totally about the taste. And I like the way that you talked about the soil. I mean, soil health has been a huge theme on my podcast throughout ever since I first started. But on February 24th, I'm doing like 6 interviews because one day off I have like all spring. And I'm talking to 2 soil scientists.
Exciting.
Yeah. So I'm glad you made that connection for people. And it's fun to talk to a cook. And my mom, you know, that's like her love is she's a big cook. So do you want to tell us about something that didn't work so well this season?
This season, the biggest challenge, and this might be a heads up for your listeners, is that we in Pennsylvania, I think, was it this 2015, was the first year, and we have it here on site confirmed now, for something, it's a new pest called the Allium leaf miner. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all.
No.
It's a Allium, pest that attacks, you know, garlic, onions, chives, kind of everybody in that family, where it's really kind of insidious, where it comes out in the spring. It will lay eggs into the foliage of, you know, those of those allium crops, Alix as well. The egg gets laid into the leaves, then it travels down kind of that larvae stage or whatever, makes its way down towards the base of the plant, where it pupates and does like all these other really damaging things, and kind of damaging the stems all the way down. So I think growers have had trouble where it can really make an onion crop unsalable. Our fall leeks really suffered, were to the point where a lot of them were not saleable. That was probably the toughest challenge that we have had on site this year. So it wasn't really, you know, the fault of the onions. The onions look great, but it's a new pest that's coming up. And I don't know exactly where else it's been ID'd in the United States, but it's, I think it was first originally ID'd, I want to say, coming from Eastern Europe, Poland perhaps. And so we know it's a pest that can stay in these northern climates. So that's our new challenge, and probably the most destructive thing that we had ID'd here on the farm last year. And I hope it doesn't come to your listeners.
Do you want to talk about climate change?
Oh, that's a scary topic. I mean, that just goes back to, you know, the Rodale Institute, you know, we talk about climate change and the positive effects of organic agriculture and getting that carbon back down into the soil through cover cropping and through, you know, getting up our organic matter content. But it's really got to come down to the people being vigilant and demanding it. I think across the board, and how they use, you know, all their fossil fuels, to what they're demanding from their farmers, to now what I think we're going to have to demand from, not to get political, or you can edit this the way you want, but, you know, our government, that it's a really scary, scary thing. So I think it has to come down to us and making the demands on, you know, the people that we're buying the products from, and the folks that are making policy or changing policy.
I think that's perfect. Lots of golden seeds you drop there, and just very inspirational. It's also just like a super side note, but like this morning on Facebook, I got snagged in this like autism awareness thing for 2017, you know, but at the beginning of my podcast, I talked to this Dr. Stephanie Seneff from MIT, and she talked about the links between glyphosate and autism.
Okay,
or maybe
there's
not these hard links, but like, you know, her big thing is, let's do the research. Let's find out, because the graphs and the curves on the graphs look pretty similar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 1976, they started introducing glyphosate to, you know, lawns and our food, and the rise in autism just like rises right to it. So I'm glad that you said that. And I always think it's important. I tell listeners a lot that Congress people, like, even if they agree with you, it's even just as important to talk to them, because they need people to back them up. They need the people to say, yes, this is what we want. And then the ones that don't agree with you, it's always good to call their offices too. And it's just an easy phone call. It always seems scary, but then, like, you know, you just dial it and it's done. People are always very, you know, either side, whoever answers the phone is always polite. So anyway, before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Organifi Green Juice is a gently dried superfood mix that supports health, mental clarity, while detoxifying your body, all in one delicious drink. What I love about Organifi, it makes me feel great. It's easy. It doesn't take much time. It's full of nutrients and superfoods that I have a hard time getting anywhere else, and it just tastes delicious. Now, as a teacher, you all know that our time is totally limited. I have kids in my classroom from 7:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. So just even using this simple thing can be difficult for me, but I can pull it off, and so can you. If you want to feel good and get all your greens in a simple, easy drink, remember, you can get a discount as an Organic Gardener podcast listener by entering code OGP16, and Organifi will give you a 15% discount now. So just go to Organifi.com, and when you go to checkout, enter code OGP16, and they'll give you 15% off your order anytime. Did you know that you could support the Organic Gardener podcast without doing anything differently? If you're going to buy something on Amazon.com, since I'm an Amazon affiliate, if you go to Amazon through a link on my page, which every book that is listed on my website is linked to Amazon.com, you don't have to buy that book, but anything you buy that day from Amazon will give me a very, very small commission. But I got to tell you, it would sure help pay for, you know, just some of the basics it costs to keep the podcast up there. And now let's get to the root of things. Maggie, what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, is there something you have to force yourself to get out there and do?
I hate mulching. I don't know why. It is so important. So this is definitely not a commercial not to mulch your garden. But there's something about it that it's just mentally not my favorite thing to do. I can physically handle it, but I'd rather weed over mulch.
Interesting. I always think it's itchy because Mike mulches a lot with hay and straw and stuff. And so, but don't worry about that, because like next to soil health, mulching is probably the number one tip people say on my show. And I made like a little PDF called 7 Awesome Ways to Save Time in Your Garden. And that's definitely at the top of that list. So yeah, I know I kind of like the way that you said you hate it because nobody said that. And other people might be like, oh, I'm going to try mulching. And maybe they need to, you know, realize that that might not be the funnest thing. And I even just didn't like the interview I'm just about to post. The guy talks about mulching all the time. That's the secret to their success.
Well, it's good. And this is where gardening, you know, it's kind of like one of those life lessons where there are other things in life that you don't like to do, but you really should be doing them. Mm-hmm. And mulching also falls into that category.
Okay. So on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I love transplanting, seeding. I love the beginning and all that spring work. I really enjoy that. So probably transplanting. I don't know why it's so satisfying. It really is.
So I was just blessed for my second anniversary to post an interview I did with Jean-Martin Fortier up in Canada.
Yes.
And it was so interesting that he talked about transplanting beets. But also the way like he talked about it is that like all of a sudden when you're transplanting that, your garden just comes to life and you've got all these neat polished rows of, you know, that are like just organized and it's like instant garden. So I can see that. And he transplants a lot of things.
Yeah, he does. I've seen him. Yeah, I saw him talk. I think he was at Yale or something like that a few years ago, like talking to their sustainable gardeners. And I think I remember actually kind of that same kind of comment of him transplanting beets and things like that. And I was like, whoa. But, you know, his labor intensiveness, it certainly pays off for him.
Yeah, because he was like, I can't afford to have like that space like empty. Yep. If I direct seed them, there's a chance that a lot of them aren't going to come up. And this makes sure my rows are neat and full. And it gives me 3 weeks on the season. And he said that even though he's in a northern climate, which this was encouraging to me, that they do 3 successions of almost everything a year. Whereas I've always felt like where we are, you know, you're pretty much going to get one. You're lucky if you can get one to grow one crop and to come in and, you know, to be able to put it in and get it out before the frost. So, but we're in like, you know, the Rocky Mountains, like I said. So how about, do you have some gardening advice that you want to share that you think's like, you know, the best gardening advice you've ever received?
I think it's really, it's a big one. I think it's starting to do with what you love. I think it's love what you do. You know, I think that is start small and love with what you do. That would be my biggest piece of gardening advice, and making sure that what you do is manageable. I think people who, I think like a lot of things in life, you know, when we get frustrated, when we take on too much, and it might not necessarily be that we don't like the task, but we become overwhelmed with the work. So I would say, you know, focus on what you love to do and start there.
I think that is excellent advice, because I am totally the type of person who goes, like, even the other day I went to the dollar store and here's like 4 seed packets for a dollar and I just couldn't resist buying them. And we all end up like, you know, my husband, I'll come home and he'll be like, where are you going to put all that, you know, from the plant sale? And like, you know, here's, I don't know, I just couldn't help it. And then, yeah. And then I tell listeners all the time, I love to start the garden, but then like, what, you want me to water it again today? I just watered it yesterday. I've got other things to do. So But yeah, then we all love the spoils when it grows.
Yeah, absolutely. And along those lines, like I would say, you know, make it part of make it manageable is like, right, if you hate to water, then, you know, again, like those tasks that are, they seem, you know, labor intensive at first, but put out the drip tape, put out the soaker hose, or do whatever you have to do to kind of minimize those things that you don't enjoy so that you can spend more time, you know, on the things you do enjoy, like harvesting or staking or, you know, deadheading, or, you know, if you're more of an ornamental gardener. Yeah, definitely.
I'm like, deadheading has been a struggle for me too. And I know Lisa Ziegler gave me a big lecture and she's like, you've got a deadhead. It's going to make more and more flowers grow. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. But I don't know. My time is like, I'm lucky if I can get 20 minutes in the garden a day. It seems like there'll be weeks where like three, four days will go by and I won't make it even down there. But, you know, other people are different and that's me. And I'm blessed to have a husband who gets to get down there every day. So I can always look out my window and see it. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
My very favorite tool, I mean, of course, everybody has tons of favorite tools, is probably one of those really sharp gardening knives. I don't know if you've seen those. And they kind of, you know, they look like a giant knife, like a large cooking knife. They're almost that size of a large chef's knife, but they're, you know, certainly more sturdy. And some of them have teeth and some of them just have a sharper edge, not as sharp as a chef's knife. But I really love those for transplanting. I think they're great for dividing roots up and things like that, or perennials. But I really enjoy a really good garden knife.
Nice. Is it like a lot of my guests have recommended like a hori knife? Like, is that?
That's exactly what they're like. Yep. Oh, absolutely. Okay. And my favorite one comes from A.M. Leonard. I think they still make them, but it has a bright orange handle. And I love bright orange handles in the garden because there's nothing worse than finding your, like, number one, losing your favorite tool, but it's worse when you find it, you know, at the end of the season when it's rusted and, thank God you didn't hit it with a piece of equipment or what have you. So I think whoever came up with orange handles, you know, that was kind of a gift to gardeners everywhere.
Nice. I know that feeling for sure. So what's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
I would say I'm kind of a fall person. So I would say, you know, going back to those winter squash, I love butternut squash soup. I love leek onion soup. I'm a big soup person from the garden. I would say for cooking, probably second to that, or maybe they're tied. I don't know. But that whole thing about fresh greens and fresh arugula coming out of the garden, that you can't beat. And that's where, like, I think if anybody has space at all that they can, you know, put up a small window box, something like greens that you get fresh, it blows the supermarket, you know, out of the water.
Oh, I like that. I always talk about I want a kitchen garden, like a garden that's right outside my kitchen door for like making salads right when dinner's ready. And my mom, I was also spoiled there because she has like tons of fennel and just really good herbs that she always puts on her salads. And she'll go out there. I'm like, teach me how to do this. But it's still at this age, I have not learned, my poor mom. But she can make a salad taste so good with the fresh things right outside her front door. So how about a favorite internet resource? Where do you like to surf on the web?
Oh boy. I tend to surf like places that are, you know, I surf like Johnny's and High Mowing and Strict Medicinals. And I like to surf the actual, you know, the websites that are selling things. I would say I surf there more. And then to a second degree, maybe sometimes surfing botanical gardens and things like that, or fine gardening. But, I really like surfing the websites that are selling.
Okay, so I'm so curious. So I wrote a story once and one of my characters worked at a botanical garden. Like, what are you looking for at a botanical garden website? Like design or like information?
Kind of more design. Yeah, so I think, you know, definitely growing in a garden, excuse me, is different than growing in kind of field production where there's that, you know, design aesthetic to it. So just kind of ideas with design and think layout kind of things and kind of efficiencies, you know, there's, of course, they have an enormous staff at those places. But it's kind of more design when I kind of surf those.
Okay. And then I
surf varieties. Yeah.
Sorry, what was that? Like flower societies?
Well, no, I would search for more varieties and things like
Oh,
that from actual seed companies themselves. It's kind of.
Now, do you think botanical gardens tend to grow organically?
I don't think all of them do, but I was up in Maine a couple of years ago, and I think it's the Booth Bay. I'm going to get this wrong. I should get this right. The botanical garden that's in Booth Bay is absolutely, it's phenomenal. I believe that they are organic, and that might be the only truly organic, is that true, garden that I've been to. I don't know if other botanical gardens are organic or not. I know some certainly that are not. But I think it's possible, and I believe that they're one of the places that's doing it. And that's
Nice.
really
Okay.
exciting. Yeah, that's very exciting.
That is. Okay. How about what's your favorite reading material, like book or magazine or blog?
Probably my favorite, and I'm some of your listeners are kind of small growers. I like Growing for Market. I don't know if
Is that
you're.
Lynn Bozinski?
Yeah, that she's great. Yep. And that's probably the, and then I do, I listen to, different podcasts and things like that occasionally.
Recommend a
If I get
podcast
time.
or two.
The one that's on, well, is it a podcast? The NPR program, You Bet Your Garden. That's one that's here local in this area. I'll listen to him. I'll surf like A Way to Garden, Margaret Roach. I think she worked for Martha Stewart at one point. That's kind of more ornamentals. But yeah, it depends. It kind of whatever kind of comes into my world, I'll take a look at.
Cool. All right. How about, do you have any business advice? Because you're working with selling for the CSA. Like, if somebody wanted to get started selling produce or extra, in gardening for business.
Yeah, I would say, it's. Know your market. I think there are a lot of places, there's a lot, or just say a lot of competition, at least here on the East Coast, more and more with small scale growers and getting out into the marketplace, which is fantastic. But I would say to know your competition and not be surprised by it. And I would start, again, I would say start small and build solid connections. I think that's the most important thing. I think, starting out, you want to have good quality produce. And again, this kind of goes back to my beliefs about cooking and putting the best thing possible on a plate. And I would say, work on your quality, work on your efficiencies, because that's what will carry you into the future.
Nice.
And again, don't overwhelm yourself. Yeah.
To what?
Not to overwhelm yourself. Yeah.
Okay. I was gonna ask you about you said building solid connections like at your farmer's market or with like your
I think
customers or
everywhere.
like with other growers or
I would say all of those, all of the above. It depends on what type of business model that you're looking at. If you want to be somebody who does CSAs and farmers markets, or maybe somebody that just does farmers markets or just CSAs, you want to build those solid connections to that type of customer. If you're working with restaurants, that's a whole nother ball of wax and different levels of demand, as is wholesaling. So you really want to understand who your client is and meet their needs, and then be able to kind of bring them along and maybe show them something unexpected and have them kind of no pun intended, but grow with you. And I think it's also understanding your clients, and then you also you're making the connections with local farmers that are around you. I'm a newer transplant to Pennsylvania. But having more experience, living and working in Connecticut, but it's really valuable to meet those other growers who can share their experiences and share different things that they've seen in their fields and kind of commiserate and get ideas from. I think it's really important.
okay, ready for my final question?
Okay.
If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, which certainly could be the Rodale Institute, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you think is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or globally?
Of course, I'm always going to plug where I work. So the Rodale Institute, a place like this that does really good work, is always looking for support from People who are, interested in what we're doing to, support us financially or just kind of to have that level of interest and follow us and raise awareness of what we're doing and the ways that we're trying to connect with our world. But, I think the way I see things is that people aren't going to get it until they make that personal connection with themselves. So what I would love to see is more people gardening, more people growing, more people doing that on a really personal level and really having that understanding of that connection between themselves, the environment, and their food. I think from that, every other decision flows. I think once you see what you can do in your own garden and grow organically and the quality that can come out of it, I think you start, again, to demand things that are different from your supermarkets. I think you demand things different from people that are setting kind of the bigger policy on where, maybe your flour is coming from or kind of those more commodity crops. I think it all starts at home. I really do. So I would love to see people more out there gardening and kind of being out in the environment in general,
I think that was perfect. Well, I think that's probably plenty to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden. And I think your quote could maybe be the grow with you thing that you said about if you're going to have other people working, just, building those connections, whether it's like, you're growing in your own backyard or you're growing in your front yard and you have neighbors who are watching, just talking to different people, or if you're, going to start selling to a CSA or getting customers, just like growing your connections and building those relationships. Does that sound good?
That sounds fine. Sure.
Okay. And do you want to just tell listeners how to connect with you?
Sure. You can connect with me through the Rodale Institute. So you can look at the website. So I think it's rodaleinstitute.org online. And you can get my contact information there for my email or I'd hate to give out my phone number, but my phone number is as well as online.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with us this morning. Yeah. I know it's a Saturday, and so I really appreciate you dealing with my schedule and sharing such great golden seeds. I know you just taught us a lot today, and we just thank you for all the great hard work you're doing to protect our planet.
I'm happy to, Jackie. I hope your listeners get something out of it, and I hope you keep up your good work that you're doing. We need everybody doing this type of work, and it's always exciting to talk to someone who is so passionate and involved with it. So it's been my pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.